Good evening. It is 6:08, and today is March 17, 2014. St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Today is a policy for instruction personnel, student services committee meeting. Carlos, would you please call roll?
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Home. For the record, she called, she will be able to make it to the meeting.
Mr. Medina?
Present.
And Mrs. Searles is here as the board member, and Mrs. Quintana. And we have many administrators present. Thank you. Next agenda item.
Item A, review and consideration of proposed changes for summer school compensation. Martha Aguirre, Martha Carrasco.
Ms. Carrasco.
Good evening, Madam Chair, committee members, and Dr. Galavis. I had mailed you right before spring break. I put together a memorandum explaining some changes that we have for the upcoming summer school program. And I will go over what we are requesting. Basically, what we're doing is we're wanting to hire 3 summer school administrators at the elementary, at the middle, and at the high school level. These hires will be for internal applicants, so they'll be internal employees that will assume these positions to coordinate the planning, the recruitment, and the oversight at each level. So we're requesting that these positions be paid through a stipend, $3,000 for the elementary and the middle school, $4,000 for the high school. These payments will be paid in 2 payments, at the beginning of summer school and at the end of the summer school. We're requesting that as one of the changes. We're also recommending that the aides and paraprofessionals working the summer school program, when they are off calendar, that when they come back to work during the summer, that we pay them what their current hourly rate is. In the stipend listing that I provided you, it does have a rate of $8.50 per hour for extra duty. However, we have found in the past that it's difficult to recruit these paraprofessionals and aides to come in to work, since sometimes they come in and do the exact same job that they're doing during the regular school calendar, and then for them to come in at $8.50. So we're proposing that we pay them at the at their current rate if they come in as aides or if they come in to do any office work. We're also eliminating from the stipend list the $23.50 rate for summer school. Basically, the way it read for the stipends is that we were paying $35 for TEKS-based instruction and $23.50 like for the prep day for anything that testing. However, the teaching staff that does perform these duties has always made the argument, well, if I'm testing, it's TEKS related. If I and so they, there's always that discussion between the $23.50 duties and the $35 duties. So what we're proposing is that we just pay $35 across the board for anyone that is certified and is performing duties during summer school. That would include our the school nurse, that the nurse is certified. So anybody working during the summer, that we pay them the $35 an hour. Now, the reason for these changes is that summer school for this summer has been restructured, and it is somewhat different than what we've done in the past. And Mr. Masurto is sitting here next to me, and he can explain to you, you know, what are some of those changes and why the changes. We've shrunk the scope of summer school for this coming year versus the previous years. And I know that, you know, there was just $1 million or something spent over just a few days for summer school. So what we're doing is narrowing the scope honing in on those content areas. And I will, at this point, turn it over to Mr. Basurto if you have any specific questions about summer school.
Mr. Medina?
I do have a question. Thank you for that. In past years, have we not had summer school administrators? Mm-hmm. How did we do it last year?
In the previous years, what we've done is that, you know, we do have our principals on a 2/24 work calendar. Mm-hmm. So they are working, and I guess everybody just kind of pitches in simply because, you know, during that time, sometimes the APs that are on a 2/19 calendar, if they're not available, the principals are. So they've got to coordinate vacation time during this time. A lot of people want to take their time off. Mm-hmm. So they've coordinated. So sometimes someone starts the planning and then someone's in charge, and it's just, you know, different people pitching in. The idea that has come up now is that there be just one person overseeing the whole ball of wax for the duration of summer school. In other words, they would start from the recruitment of the staff and working through it, overseeing everything. That would be a specific duty that person would have, and hence the funding for the stipend for that person, and they would take it from beginning to end. At each level.
Okay, so we're talking 3,000 to 4,000, raising it from 850 to the regular stipend pay for professionals, and eliminating everybody at 2,350, going to 35 per hour. Are we budgeted for something like this?
Yes, we are.
We come in under budget or at budget?
Under.
Under. How much under?
Well, according to last year, we spent $858,000.
Okay.
This year we're looking at about $602,000
combined. Mm-hmm. Same setup as last year. You're just restructuring.
Well, we are minimizing. So what we're doing is we're targeting the SSI grades, which is fifth and eighth grade, because that's by mandate through state law. Mm-hmm. So we're ensuring that those kids are going to be targeted. And my understanding in previous years, the kids were brought in and then they had to kind of jump around. So let's say if I'm a math kid, well, I had to go all day. And not only did I go to math, but then I had to go to reading. Mm-hmm. You and I both know that's a waste of their time. So we want to be more specific. So if a kid comes in for math, they're going to be with us all day doing math. Mm-hmm. If a kid needs both, he's going to get both. So it's only going to be the fifth and eighth grade. Now, the high school is going to be comprehensive, so that's not going to change. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're looking at. Now, a little bit more information on the idea of a summer coordinator or summer school principal. In many districts, in my experience, that's pretty much high. I got groomed to be principal. So basically, we'd be taking hiring within.
It's like a testing bed.
Yeah, and so basically, Carrollton, Irving, Dallas, here El Paso ISD has this model where this individual will come in, we'll obviously screen for them, and they have to apply, and these are our hopefully aspiring principals in the future, have the opportunity to hire the people. They're going to have to come up with a plan, manage it, keep track of their kids, and pretty much run summer school. So it's a good opportunity. Now, a lot of the time and effort, because at the end of the day, they still have their job. So a lot of this is going to be done after school. They're going to have to hire people after school. They're going to have to, you know, do all the scheduling, all those things that need to be done. And then, of course, they're going to come right in during the summer and pretty much be the campus principal for the summer.
What was the summer school budget that we had allotted from the 2013-2014 budget?
The budgeting was within each campus. They allocated their state combat funds and Title I funds for their summer school program, as they envisioned the program moving forward and following pretty much the same program we've had year after year. And so basically it's within their Title I and their state combat funding that they have.
So considering we spent 850 plus last year, it's in the same realm as that number last year. Now we're
right
underneath that.
And so now our campus principals are able to, some are considering training for our staff with the excess funds that they will have now. And others are looking at other programs or equipment that's needed in the classroom. Because, of course, based on the funding that they're working with, it's all for the instruction.
Can you go over those numbers again? What was last year's, Mr. Basurto?
Yes.
800 what?
It was last year. It was 858,198 to be exact.
Okay.
And then this year,
yep,
is 602,316, which is a difference of 255,000. 883 is what we're projecting variance.
That's what I wanted to see.
Yes.
One other thing that I want to comment on is that last year, I believe the summer school were half days. We will be doing full day.
And summer school is slated for what time period?
So what we're proposing is, obviously, in addition to our SSI grades, so we're talking about 5th and 8th in high school, mm-hmm. we're still going to continue on with our special education programs, because those are mandated, so those are not going to change in our pre-KK programs and our minors. But, for example, in the elementary, what we're proposing is we're going to go from June 11th through the 23rd, and it's going to be for 5th grade SSI, math, and reading. And the thing is that they have to test at the end of that time. So that's why they're only there. They only get 7 days of instruction. Because by the time school gets out, by the time we get the teachers in, there's only 7 days. Yeah, and that's part of the rationale is to really offer summer school in the other grades and spending all this money when they're only there for 7 days. Now, for SSI, we have to do it, so we got to be really specific and very targeted for those kids because we need to make sure that they're successful.
What about middle school?
Middle school is going to be June 11th to the 23rd, and it's 7 days of instruction. Wow. Now, let me go back to the elementary. The times of operation that we're proposing is from 7:30 to 3 o'clock. So it's 7.5 hours of instruction. So
full day.
I think last year was more like 4 hours or 5 hours.
In the high school?
High school, let's go to the high school. And the high school, we're looking to a little longer, obviously because of the credits. And we're looking at June 16th through July 11th. And the hours will be like two sessions, a.m. and p.m. And they'll be pretty much from 8 to 4 p.m. You got the AF session with a lunch break and then the afternoon session.
Last year, how many instruction days did they actually
have? There is 15 days of instruction.
No. Last year, how many did each of those structures get?
No, I do not have
them. If these are 7, and you're saying
it was like something like 18 days.
18 days each?
For the high school.
Oh, for the high school. What about for elementary?
For the elementary, it was something like 11 days last year.
Okay, this time they're having 7.
7, but longer hours.
Longer hours.
Yes, sir.
That's all the questions. Thank you.
Ms. Loring?
Yes, ma'am.
Our social studies scores were dismal. Are you addressing that in summer school?
No, ma'am. Where we're addressing, I know, because those are not SSI. So state mandates that 5th grade and 8th grade, reading and math only, are the SSI.
That's it?
Yes, that's it. And in high school, we were doing a comprehensive high school.
Talk about our scores today.
Excuse me?
How we're addressing it.
Oh, how are we addressing it today, though?
Our social studies.
So in particular, our 8th grade social studies were not very good, correct? And
it,
so this year, yes, it was the 8th grade social studies where we didn't do very well. And one of the changes that we did do this year was we double-blocked social studies in 8th grade. Preliminary results from our STAR-Ready results showed a significant increase already. So we should be expecting healthy increases in 8th grade social studies just by the double-blocking of them.
Great.
Last year, 8th grade social studies were not double-blocked.
It's like it wasn't even taught by the scores.
Well,
it's true.
And so, but this year, we expect a significant increase.
Great.
And when we see our preliminary results from STAR-Ready, mm-hmm. they had huge jumps in some cases.
Super.
So we're expecting to help you outside. Yes.
I'm in there with you hoping for it.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
I have a question.
Thank you.
Are you done, Ms. Laurie?
Yes, I am.
What the schools in the surrounding area are using this model?
Well, my experience was when I was in Irving, I got to be summer school principal, and I was in Carrollton, I had the same opportunity, and I know in Dallas, even as early as last year, we had the summer school principal model. So those are three that I can tell you off the bat.
Locally?
No. Locally is my understanding.
Well, and of course, I've been from El Paso ISD for many years now. However, the practice was to have a coordinator, a summer school coordinator, and even a summer school clerk, which we're not proposing at this state, for our district. However, the summer school coordinator is someone that is hired at the El Paso ISD, and we didn't verify current practice. This is something that we can certainly look into and give you a response for the Thursday
time. I know for sure Dallas ISD is current.
And we can check the local school district.
Yeah, Dallas is a big district.
Yes, ma'am.
You mentioned the high school comprehensive. How comprehensive?
So we're looking at EOC remediation programs for those kids that need to take those EOCs. That's going to have that. We're going to have also the new math project that we're proposing.
And, what math project?
Yes, Mr. Do you want to come explain your math project? Come on, sir. And also, we're doing credit recovery as well. So we got credit recovery, EOC, and then the new math project.
The new math is, we're actually combining it with El Paso Community College. We're going to feed into it, preparing kids for dual credit as well. So it's going to be a double-edged sword, so to speak. It's going to be a remediation for all those math that need to take tax and Algebra 1, since it's the only tested EOC. And then the other one will launch the math 13-14, which is dual credit. So in other words, for those students that qualified for dual credit in math and reading, but didn't qualify in math, we're going to remediate the math in the summer so that they could take dual credit in that fall.
Adrian, what do you think of this?
We're saving money, but are we serving kids? And it sounds like we are. We're just providing longer hours. And if we're saving $255,000, thank you for bringing that number, because that's the number I would always look
for. Yes, sir.
I would go to recommend it. I'm concerned a little bit that we're shortening it, but if it works and teachers are compensated accordingly, then I'm for it. I mean, what do you think, Ms. Lauren?
You are shortening the number of days.
But you're lengthening the day. I understand that. I'm just, in 7 days of instruction, is an elementary, is he going to be able to absorb? I mean, my daughter, if she has to go to summer school, I hope she never does, would she be able to absorb something in 7 days and then test on it at the back end of it? That's my biggest concern, but if we only had 11 half days before, it's still not enough.
I mean, no, it's not. And Mr. Medina, to that point, just to be honest, there's no research that supports that summer programs really make that much of a difference. And it's because of the...
Thank you for your honesty.
Yeah, because basically...
thinking.
Yeah, and it's the state mandate, SSI has to be done, I'm just being honest. And it's unfortunate because the window for testing is right towards the end of June. Mm-hmm. So when school lets out, turn the kids around, and then they only come back for 2 weeks in some cases, and then they have to turn around and test. And I agree with you. I don't know how effective that is. Now, I did hear last year we had math kids who just failed math, and then they would have to attend a reading class. That don't make sense. So I'm thinking that they're math. They need to be in math all day. We only have them for 7 days. We got to make it count. Mm-hmm. Now, we're not going to have some kids that have to go to both. So be it. But those individual students that just need that one, shouldn't they... It's like we got to pull our marbles in that basket for that kid so they can get the most out of it. So that's the kind of strategic we got to be. We got to be to the point.
I like the structure of it. Don't get me wrong. If it's mandated, we have to do it. My biggest concern would be the administrators. Because they are already there, and you're saying that they have to coordinate with APs, they only have 224 versus 219. I would figure this is something that we could work out with the budget prior to that. If this is state mandated, they should have worked into their contract. But that's really my only concern, outside of the fact that we're saving $255,000 from previous year. I'm all for that.
Okay.
But again, that does concern me, that we are using stipends when we have very qualified and very very good administrators as it is. I know we're going to get some new ones in the coming year. But we have some of the best ones out there. So.
Well, and it would be from the pool that we would make them the summer school principal. My hope is that the assistant principals want to apply for these jobs.
Oh, okay.
That's my hope. And we'll interview them and go through that process.
Or the instructional coordinators.
Or instructional coordinators.
And those hires for these summer school coordinators will be done, interviews will be done by Mr. Masuto's office.
A committee.
There will be a committee set up for that.
Thank you for finding the savings there, Mr. Masuto. I appreciate that.
Ms. Lori.
All the kids are going to be fed?
Yes, ma'am.
Everybody gets...
The summer program will be providing services.
Even the ones that only get half day at the high school,
that's
they're
correct.
Going to get...
And even even students that aren't part of the summer program...
They get to eat.
They get to go eat.
Okay,
you know.
Everybody
so
eats.
The cost of that's not included in this. That's a separate cost that we have
the
to...
The personnel is included in...
Personnel
is
included.
Cost.
Only
and
personnel.
Of course, the meals pay for themselves because mm-hmm. they generate
of course.
Funds for us.
I'm more concerned about apples to apples. You give me a number of 858 versus 602. Is that apples to apples
that's
in salary?
Yes.
In salary, then that's fine. Food, I didn't even consider.
Yes, So sorry, just everybody gets their lunch, their breakfast, if they so needed snack, whatever they need, they're going to eat. The other thing, I have two other questions. One, we always had a program, it was called SOAR. I think by policy even it's still called SOAR. That was a transitional period for the students during the summer leaving elementary. No.
Yes, I think for the early Northwest. Yes, that's budgeted in there for the Northwest, early Northwest. I think they're the ones that.
Okay. Elementary level.
No, elementary going to middle. And we.
It's something that I know isn't part of the summer program.
Uh-huh.
It's, they get funding and it's part of their school year. We can do some research and see what they're doing now, but I don't believe
it happens in May.
Budget, yeah.
And in May, the fifth graders go to the middle school and they help them bridge between.
Just kind of,
yeah. Okay.
And right now, eighth graders are going to.
Okay, so it's happening.
Yes, exactly.
It just isn't happening in the summer now.
Yes, ma'am.
And the other question I had, historically, one of the reasons we had summer school was that our population needed something to do in the summer. Our kids needed to be kept going, kept active, have a place to go and things to do. In shortening the daytime, will there still be plenty going on all summer in the district to keep these kids involved?
The summer program will be athletic program through the high school and will be available for students. I don't know the specifics, but that will be provided.
And Mr. Mayor, I do have to give credit. I can't take all the credit. Ms. Aguirre helped me very much in this project, so I'm not a finance guy, so she helped in
I think
I don't want to take all the credit because she helped me a lot.
And I think there's going to be some more questions here.
Yeah.
That'll address that.
Ms. Lefty, I'd like to see if we could, maybe at your next meeting or in a Thursday packet, what we're going to do this summer. You know, how do we, because it has been.
We used to have recreation.
Everything.
For the kids.
Project
how was that budgeted? Yeah, that's the question.
We have
$200,000 left. What are we doing with those $200,000?
But they're state comp ed funds and Title I, so it has to be for the at-risk population and instruction program.
No, we can use it for at-risk kids.
But not for extracurricular. But we last year we didn't have any recreational programs except for the athletic programs that are held at the high school. Several years back, the Big Brothers and Big Sisters, those grants had funding, you know, but I can say the last time we had that was in 2007 when I first came on board to the district. But we can provide you a listing of the athletic programs that are going to be.
Yeah, but not everybody's.
But we'll also provide a list of recreational, like science camps or maybe writing camps.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
And maybe utilize. We'll put our heads together and come up with your
because
next meeting.
If we've saved money, that's an awesome thing. I can already think of something wonderful to do with that money. I'm sure everyone can. But were the kids served? And so maybe this is awesome to save it in summer school, but maybe that hand needs to share with the other hand that extend it to other learning opportunities. I understand the Title I funds can't be used for recreational, but learning can be fun.
And I guess the only thing is that because these were campus funds that were pulled mm-hmm. together for this, campus principals already have
their hands
have
on.
A plan on the additional funding. I guess we could go back to the board and I don't know about developing a math program, a science program.
So you haven't asked the campuses themselves?
Yes, we did. We
you did.
Yeah, we've already met with the principals.
Oh,
so
okay.
The principal think that this excess money is theirs, and they're already making plans to spend it on other things.
Oh.
Since we saved the money, said, "Hey, it's back to you now."
Mm-hmm.
So we gave the money back to the campus.
And before moving forward with the new format, we did meet with principals. We said, "This is what it's looking like. Share. How do you feel about this?"
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have another question.
Yes.
Actually, it's a comment. I don't agree with the stipend. I agree with the aides and the paraprofessionals. I agree with eliminating that $23.50 and increasing it to $35. That is my vote, my recommendation. I think it's part of the, for those administrators that are 224, part of already a part of their salary. don't think we should, they should get an additional stipend for something that is being done already in the past and should continue to be done this summer.
I will add that a lot of the times, because they're focused, campus administrators are focused on the summer school, they put off the planning for the new year, and I know that that was one of the sentiments they expressed when they heard that somebody other than themselves would be focusing on summer school, is that they now have the opportunity to plan, you know, to close out the year and plan for the new year with more time. I know Martha can attest to the next comment I'm going to make, but a lot of times what they do is come back at the end of June, early July, wanting to pay an extra body, counselor, an AP, an instructional coordinator for assistance a couple of hours a day, because they haven't prepared for the new year because they were wrapping up the high school program. And so that's just one thing that I know when you consider that they have the responsibilities of closing out and initiating a new school year, having a summer school coordinator or administrator would assist in that.
Are the principals, the current administrators, principals, are they eligible for this $3,000 to $4,000?
No.
Well,
they wouldn't be.
Not the current principal.
So we won't see a principal getting another $3,000 to $4,000. I think that's the concern here, is that they're already, in the past, they've already been doing this sort of work, and this feels like we're giving them $3,000 to $4,000 more on top of that. So as I think it needs to be reassured that these are non-current administrators, and this is more of a training bed, because that's what it sounds like. Yeah. It's a training bed.
Now, when you
for
say current administrators, you mean current principals, right?
Principals.
Not assistant principals.
Leads,
well,
yeah.
The assistant principals are on the same schedule as the principals, no? Aren't they 224?
We have some on 224 and some are 219.
Okay, so how do you can't limit those. You can't say if you're 224, you can't apply. You might have some candidates that are going to apply, and they're still on that schedule. They're still going to get that money.
Yes, they would.
You see, that's what I'm saying.
They would either be on calendar or off calendar. It just depends on who applies. It could be somebody that's off calendar, and this is all they're going to get. Mm-hmm. They need to start planning now. I mean, the planning starts now. It doesn't start a couple of days before school starts. The planning starts now. So, you know, they are going to have to already invest in doing some work
after school
or on the weekends in preparation for the opening or the first day of summer school.
They do schedules. They got to hire people. They got to turn around and interview the teacher candidates and hire the people.
But it is a possibility that you get a 224 to hire on this $3,000 to $4,000 stipend, correct?
It is possible, yes.
I have a question. If we're just talking about this tonight and the board hadn't even approved it, how do those principals know they're getting this money?
The discussion was had when they were discussed the restructuring of summer school, mm-hmm. and how what the plan was. And so I believe when they met with the principals, the discussion was had as to how the restructure was going to work and what the plans were down the road to do this.
Pending board approval.
And they
if approved, then we said this is the way direction we're going to go. If not approved, then we'll go back to the drawing board and put something else.
Okay.
So that was told to, but we didn't want to surprise the principals with the idea. We vetted it through them to kind of give their feedback.
And they were happy.
Yes.
District Action Committee.
I mean, we did talk about it. We did mention it to DAC right before the holiday break, which I believe was Thursday or Wednesday. It was Wednesday.
And they were okay?
Yeah, no one gave us, we did mention it. This is what we're thinking, this is where we're going.
Okay, nobody said, oh.
No, actually, no.
Okay, but he was.
Yeah. As far as our knowledge is concerned on that particular meeting, there was no.
Considering there's different point of views, I think I'd move to take this to the full board for approval next week.
Carlos, next agenda item.
Thank you.
And the two, hold on a second, and the two items we agree, I mean, do you agree on all of it, or?
I think we just need to take the whole thing over there. Okay. Pending the concerns that we have about the 224s and the 219s, I think that needs
basically
to be
the administrative.
summer school administrator is really is the one I...
Okay. Yes, everything else, I think we've all in agreements with the the paraprofessionals and the extra 35 instead of 2350. That we're okay with. It's the other one.
Okay.
In other words, would you want to recommend those two? So
yeah, those two are recommended.
I'll recommend those two, and then
the stipend.
Accept the stipend for $3,000 to $4,000 for internal applicants.
Okay.
That one we'll take to the full board. Okay.
Carlos, can I touch on that, please?
Item B, review of the safety and security plan. Mr. Gonzalez.
Mr. Gonzalez.
Do you have the copy, Mark? This is a framework of a safety security plan. What we plan to do is make a more comprehensive document that entails procedures and policies regarding the safety and security. But we wanted to give you something that when we spoke to Homeland Security, they gave us this template and this framework to work from. So this is just the overall plan of the safety, security, and kind of deal, but we'll be presenting in the board packets this Thursday the full plan in its entirety.
Question for you, Dr. Galaviz?
Yes.
You say that Homeland Security gave you a template. Does that mean Homeland Security already has a plan for our campuses?
Yes, Homeland Security came in and they did a walkthrough for the high school and gave us a needs assessment. And so, again, this was back in fall.
If I might add, Homeland Security, when they made an assessment, they looked at our plan, existing plan as well. Mm-hmm. And they concurred that we had a relatively good plan in place. They made a couple additional recommendations, and they gave us a template on how we should structure our plan going forward.
So the opportunity was is that we have, if you will, a lot of documents out here like this,
yeah,
but it's not compiled. So that's been the task of compiling all this document to make it concise and legible to the board. So, but we wanted to give you something, an overall view or the framework of our thinking.
Chris, I have a question for Mr. Mangatman, or even you, Mr. Gonzalez. Was this something similar to the emergency operations plan that the district used to have before that I think is still in existence?
The emergency operations plan is incorporated as part of this plan, this whole plan. This what you document you have right now is a summary of the actions that I've taken so far this year, plus some of the stuff that we are going to do to complete our security safety security plan in the years coming forward. If you would like for me, I would go through the tabs and sections and give you a brief idea of what these things are about. The business continuity, basically, under the first page is a template or a plan that will allow us to recover should we have a disaster or we cannot use the facilities. Say a high school burns down or this building is hit or something like that, we can't use it. We have to have a contingency plan to recover from that. And that's what this business continuity plan is. And that was taken from FEMA. I attended some of their classes and I used their template on how to develop a business continuity plan. Emergency operations plan, which is the next one, is what you, Ms. Gonzalez, you just spoke about. I basically modified what we had with existing. We added we updated it, and I will continue to update it once a year. The emergency response plan is something new. This is a plan that we developed to, and it's called the DCMRT, the District Crisis Management Recovery Team. Basically, it's what actions to take. We've established a tier system for the first responders. We have portable radios that are outlined later on, where all you have to do is hit one button, it's like a walkie-talkie, and it connects with Dr. Galaviz, myself, and Ms. Brigham, and we respond at that point. And it also outlines what the principals are supposed to do, what other staff are supposed to be doing as far as responding. It also has a third tier where the it's called the staff, but the executive directors will meet in case there's a need for additional support and additional resources. Going a little bit further down is the safety awareness. We have basically three items in there. We have the training of personnel, visitors procedures. We've written that and trained the receptionist on what to do in case of visitors or on the campus. We also are looking at hiring the SROs, and that's going to be coming up in, I guess, next to the board meeting. And we also restructured the how the security officers are working at the high school, as well as the Rover. What we have done there, basically, is that we looked at the routes with the intent that security officers are supposed to do three things. They're supposed to observe, report, and record. So taking that in mind, we changed the routes around to include the outside, because obviously you can't look for threats coming to the campus if you're inside all the time. So we made that. We also included a bicycle. We have a bicycle route now. And we also have using the go-kart to address the parking lots and look for outside threats. And this, for the security and surveillance cameras, we're going to be doing a presentation for the board, Tony Flores and myself. Next Wednesday, yes. And we'll provide more information on that at that time. As far as the fencing goes, most of this information, most of this fencing now has been done by the bond money to do the fencing. Mr. Dominic Padilla has got a plan scheduled out for fencing the other ones. We are looking to have a quote for the fencing around the high school.
I have a question about that.
Yes, sir.
The high school should have had fencing a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Why hasn't this been done?
Yeah.
We can't come up with the money at this point, as far as I understand.
We had over $200,000 allocated for fencing and security from the previous bond, 2006.
I'm not going to refer to Mark, well, as far as we
need
that or not for that.
The $200,000 was for the security fund, whatever was developed.
I think we directed a year ago to go ahead and fence.
Yes.
To get it fenced because of the development around, and the biggest concern was not only our perimeter, but our new equipment that we bought. And that's one of my biggest concerns. As the development is going to continue to blow up, we're going to wait till summer to fence this in, and that's when kids are just kids, unfortunately. So how quickly can we get this fenced in, considering we have $200,000? And I imagine you did get a quote initially. In fact, you came back to us.
Yes.
With 180, 160, remember those numbers, Corey?
Yes, we
why didn't we follow through with that?
My understanding at that point in time is that we're supposed to hold off until further knocks. But if I was misunderstood that, I will get on that tomorrow for you, and I'll find out exactly how soon we can get that done.
I would definitely do that, Mr. Gonzalez, only because it's been an issue. More and more schools today are at high security risk, and when we identify something, especially when it comes to the safety of our kids, it would definitely be done faster.
My apologies, sir, that I misunderstood that, but I will work on it. I will start working on it tomorrow morning, and I'll get an answer to you by next Wednesday.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Ms. Lori?
Yeah, I have two comments. I just returned from a training on security, and the man from Homeland Security said if you have no fence, well, you just lost the whole game. Because your place is not secured. And that's what the board told administration a year ago. We need the fence. So I'd like to echo that. But I'd also like to bring up the fact that it seems like lately in this district, we need an architect to put a fence up and to pay them an extreme amount of money to put that fence or to design how the fence is going to go up. Well, we had a case in point last month where a car wrecked through the, and I'd like all this for the record, where a car wrecked through the fence at Damian. And guess what? We didn't have to, the insurance company who paid to fix it did not have to have an architect.
Yes, ma'am, I took care of that.
Valley Fence is very capable. We don't need an architect for a fence.
It's a fence.
Valley Fence is professional.
Yes,
and they gave us the best quote. I remember it going through the board, and we all liked the quote and looked forward to the action going forward.
This was previous to Dr. Galavis's.
It was previous to
previous
Dr.
to him. Galavis. So nothing on you. Just I remember that conversation with Mike.
It is on me.
It is, but
now it is.
It is, but still, just saying it was previous to you. It was about a year ago.
But the, I would like to, you know, request that I see no reason on earth to have an architect paid to put up
a fence. Agreed.
And we had all agreed on Valley Fence, and we know their capabilities. They're superb.
And I may add that we tried to process the paperwork, and we did get paid for it.
Yeah, we did get paid for it, and they did a good job. But
Without
an architect. Yes, Valley Fence was capable.
My apologies if I misunderstood the instruction before. I will get on it tomorrow with the instruction.
If you could, that would be great.
Thank you, Ms. Lighting.
Going forward, then, on the communication plan, basically, we have concrete that was set up. Dr. Galavis requested that we use a badge type thing to put the central numbers on there, and which we did. We also have a call tree in the continuing continuity of operations plan, as well as the EOP. Tip of the week, if you look on our website, as of today, as I understand it, it is up already, and there's a tip, there'll be a tip of the week being put on there. Bus stop training, that is scheduled for later on this week with the transportation personnel. That's going to basically entail how to, is what to do in case of emergencies at the bus stops and how to react. We talked a little bit about the portable radios, but we got to deal with Verizon and you already know about that. Going down a little bit more. With our loss trending, I do that loss trending on a monthly basis. Right now, we are tracking well below what are we. Well, we are tracking in a downward position as well. Always with workers' comp, property damage, from a liability, we've only had two claims made the entire year. And assault on campus, we've had one reported the entire year. So we're doing very well on those. I am tracking them on a monthly basis. From a follow up process. We'll continue to have quarterly EOP meetings as directed by our hazard mitigation plan that's in force. And the training calendar will be online, but March 31st, already working on that, as well as the rest of the information. And we've already provided additional training for all principals, assistant principals, and main personnel at all campuses on how to do the DCMRT, which is the District Crisis Resource Response Team. District Crisis Response Team. Is there any questions on that portion at all? As Dr. Galavis mentioned, we will provide you with more in a detailed in the Thursday packet.
Any questions?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Carlos, next agenda item, please. This is just information.
Yeah, it's just information, I believe.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Manning.
Item C, review consideration of two job descriptions, warehouse worker and summer school administrator, Ms. Brasco.
Madam Chair, going back to the information I provided prior to spring break, I also included in your packet two job descriptions. One being that of the summer school administrator, which is what we talked about earlier. So the duties are outlined there. And of course, you know, we'll go ahead and proceed with your instructions to discuss this with the full board. I don't know if you have any particular questions regarding the job description for the summer school administrator as you reviewed it.
Sorry.
Technology.
Any questions on the summer school administrator job description that you may have?
I do have a question on the summer school administrator. sorry. I've never seen somebody touch a screen so many times.
Hilarious. That's hilarious.
Sorry. The summer school administrator, because we are looking after APs mainly and other administrators, like you said, instructional coordinators. Because of that 224 and 219, do you see an issue with the way it's currently structured so that we can possibly decipher between 224s and 219s? Or is maybe your recommendation that we put all APs to 224s? I mean, we have to hit it one way or the other is what I'm saying.
For this position? Or
yes, for this particular position, since you're looking at a pool of APs of 224s, 219s, and instructional coordinators, right?
And of course, we're going to see who else applies. I mean, within our teaching staff, there might be people okay. that have some of these requirements. And if mm-hmm. that's the case, that's why I'm saying, you know, I don't know who's going to apply. So it may be somebody that's off calendar mm-hmm. during the time summer school is going on, or it may be somebody that's on calendar, you know, on their regular work calendar.
How would you structure that if it was a summer school administrator that's got 224, like an AP? I mean, you're talking about a teacher, I get that. They're 180, I believe, or 187.
They'll be off calendar.
Yeah, they'll be off calendar, and that makes sense for the 3,000 to 4,000 stipend.
Yes. And if it's somebody that's on calendar, then it would just be an additional stipend, considering it as additional duties.
But they would get the same amount, is what I'm looking at.
Yes.
Is what I'm saying. A teacher doing the same job as an administrator who's obviously getting paid more, they would be getting the 3,000 to 4,000, and so would they. They'd be getting the same amounts.
That's correct.
Considering that they have 224 and they're off calendar on the teachers should actually get a lot more considering they're off calendar. But
yes, if we get a teacher that applies and that has the qualifications.
And you have 3,000 to 4,000 as a range, is that because of?
No, I'm saying it was $3,000 for the elementary and middle school.
And 4,000 for high school. So we don't see Mr. Coronado trying to apply for something like this.
Mr. Coronado,
you sure about that, Mr.?
Come
on, Dino, you know you want to do it.
Like I said, it's an internal posting, mm-hmm. and on that we would specify that current principals would not qualify for that.
I guess that's the biggest concern in this one, and I would move to obviously and push this up to the full board only because of that issue that we're having of 3,000 to 4,000. Outside of that, the warehouse worker?
Yes. The warehouse worker, it is the job description that you're looking at is not a new job description. We currently do have that position in the
Thought
warehouse.
So. Yeah.
However, it is a new position for maintenance. For the maintenance okay. department, and I believe they're requesting this position or needing this position because of the inventory that they're having to maintain in maintenance and in transportation, and you know the work orders and the equipment, you know, inventory of the equipment, inventory of parts in the transportation department. So they're wanting to consolidate all of this in one area and have someone responsible to handing out the tools to maintain.
Is that realistic? I mean, you're talking facilities and you're talking maintenance. Now you're crossing over sort of two. Is that realistic to do?
It is in the sense that I know that in other districts they do have, you know, I know for a fact that there is like a parts warehouse and of course, you know, we're not the size of in El Paso or Isleta, but there is significant amount of equipment in the maintenance department currently, and there is parts and they have a small parts room in the transportation. Mm-hmm. And so I know that many times we've gone over asset inventories, you know, that down in that area. And so Mr. Padilla has requested a dedicated person to help out with all of this equipment in the maintenance area.
So this is just a revision of what they currently have to include other
units? Yes, I mean, they're currently doing that. We just want to just go ahead and get a dedicated person for this position.
Okay. Let's say we move that to the full board for approval, the warehouse worker, but I would still, for full board approval, to the summer school administrator. It's for them, for us, full board to look at it.
Just the warehouse and pending the summer school administrator, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, Ms. Laurie?
I have a question. I was totally confused when I saw this warehouse worker, because when I think warehouse worker, I think they're working back
yes.
there. So is there any way you can distinguish that this is transportation department warehouse worker versus, or does anybody really even want to? Do you want to sometimes use them? Oh, I see. can be mobile.
Okay. It can be mobile, but at the same time, they're going to be doing, you know, a lot of the same duties that they would be doing here. But, you know, as far as managing the inventory of their stock and their equipment.
Okay.
So they will be doing a lot of this. And like I said, this is a new position for that area. I will be taking that from, I believe we still have some PES money left. And I will be using that money for this position. That funding
will
come from there.
Okay, I have another question.
Ms. Lauren.
It says you have to be able to operate a light truck. Do we have that truck? Or do they think they're getting a new truck?
No, they have trucks down.
Okay,
they
nobody's going to come back in 2 months?
I believe they even might have a forklift.
Okay, but... I mean, we're not looking at the, oh, we got the guy, and now the guy needs the truck.
Well, I know they have vehicles.
Okay.
I don't know if in the future they're going to come back and request additional vehicles, but currently all we're asking for is a position.
All I'm asking is that, you know, well, you approve the position. You know they have to have a truck. If they have to have a truck, could they tell us on the front end, yeah, you know, there's no truck for the guy?
I know they have vehicles in maintenance and in transportation. I know that they currently have people running around picking up parts, and so that they have vehicles.
It should be sufficient to cover this person.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? So we recommend to the full board?
I recommend to the full board the warehouse worker.
The warehouse worker.
And pending the summer school administrator based on the actions.
Pending a more discussion.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Carlos, next agenda item, please.
Item D, information of DLB legal teacher required plans and reports.
Good evening. This report is in according to Mr. Medina's request. This is on the DLB legal teacher required plans and reports. And so on Thursday, February 13, 2014, what we did is we gave campus principals a survey before even going over the policy, just to kind of get a gauge of what they've been requiring the teachers. And it was basically three questions or three statements. And they were, number one, please list the kind of types of reports that you require teachers to submit throughout the school year. Secondly, was given the list, are there any other reports you require teachers as part of the scope of work? If so, please list them. And then lastly, on average, about how many reports are teachers required to complete per month? So once the survey was taken and you have been given copies of all their submissions.
There's no attachment as to who's what campus, it's just an overall survey.
Yeah, just an overall, we just want to know overall.
Just, we're getting from each campus,
yes,
from each principal only.
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct. And so based off of that, I was able to summarize the results. So for number one, a lot of the responses were student grade progress reports were being asked, 6 weeks grades, parent contact logs, PLC planning, lesson plans, referrals, student data analysis, goal setting, needs assessment, attendance logs, failure reports, and so on. On number two, we also had CIC summary notes, parent-teacher contact logs, student data analysis, SST data, documentation, and RTI information. And then on the third one, the frequency of reports range from 2 to 3 reports a month to 3 a week, depending on the program focus at the time. So for example, during the time of progress reports, obviously teachers are making progress for kids, grades, assessments, and planning. So once we summarized that, then we went ahead and went over the policy with the principals to kind of remind them that they weren't cognizant of already the policy. Hey, these are the do's and don'ts, and we went over the 10. And just by looking at the summary and the responses, pretty much, it was pretty right on spot. I don't think we're, you know, asking teachers anything outside of this realm of the 10. So that's what we did, and we made sure we trained them and had signatures to verify that they attended to the training. And so I just kind of want to report that to you.
Is there anything that has been done to minimize the amount of work, or is this just a report on what they're currently doing? Because that's another function of our policy, is to reduce the number of reports and paperwork done. This is a list of what they're currently asked to do. Is there any plan to
reduce it? Well, my plan, because I thought of that. I was like, well, how can we minimize that? And the only way that I could think of at the time was to actually train them on the policy, which I don't think they've been trained before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, hey, by the way, here's this policy, mm-hmm. and here are the 10 do's and the 10 do's that it's okay to ask teachers to perform these tasks. But anything outside of this realm is not okay, which is why I did the signature sheets and I even gave them a copy. That, to me, is just part of information and training, mm-hmm. and making them aware. Sometimes, you know, you ask of people and you don't even realize what the policy is. So this was my way of saying, hey, here's what the policy is. Take a look at it. Let's go over it. And we even cross-reference this to the answers that they provided to say, hey, look at your answers and here's what the policy says and are you spot on? That's one way to prevent, is by just training them and making them aware of the policy.
So is there any anything that you see in any of these surveys that was a concern?
No, sir.
None.
I didn't know. That's why I summarized them, because I wanted to provide you, like, here's what more or less the summary of things were. And I really didn't see anything that stood out. And in my mind, that's why I asked them to check their answers to what the policy is. Look at your responses and look at what we just trained on. Are you spot on? And are you
so they could this? Actually be not providing you full answers because you've given them the policy and said, here's the policy. Are you doing that? And they could actually be giving you something.
No, I give them the survey first. Then we went over the policy.
Oh, okay. I'm like, here's the answers. Why don't you give me the answers?
The whole point was to see, tell me what you do and that require. And then afterwards, we went over the policy. Then after going over the policy, hey, check your answers to make sure, hey, are you in line with what we're supposed to be doing?
It's not
a policy. It's a law.
It's a law.
Yeah, it's not even a policy.
It's legal.
It's legal.
Yeah. That's really where we had not seen a report like this. From my understanding, and the boards, the current board members that have been here longer than I have, they've never seen a report like this.
Okay.
Which is good that I start asking, because, you know, administration's been very open. I just want to make sure that as teachers and as administrators, they understand that the policies are in place for a reason to protect ourselves, and also make sure that we're providing great service to our students, because if they're bogged down with reports, they're not able to teach.
And also, for that reason, I put it on the principal's meeting agenda. It's mm-hmm. clearly outlined. There's on the agenda. I put signatures. So we're all been held accountable to the fact that, hey, you were trained, your signatures.
I'd like to see this on a yearly basis, just to make sure that they don't get too far to the
and
left.
And that's probably something we have to go back and remind and readdress.
That's a law, also.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing, is the first year we've seen it. So if it was the law, why weren't we providing it before? So, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Carlos, next agenda item, please.
Item E, discussion and possible action regarding the employee recognition event contract. Mr. Cervellas.
Good afternoon, Chairwoman and members of the committee. I'm here to bring the contract for the employee recognition event this year. Our designated date is May 9th, again from 6 to 11:30 at the Grace Gardens. This year, the contract is about $1,000 lower than last year. We were able to kind of bring down the price a little bit, but it's coming up. At $17,475 at Grace Gardens.
How much?
That includes $17,475.
Who was last year's?
It's about $18,000.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's the same number of people, 500, that were estimated for, and you know, pretty much the same setup as last year.
$17,475. 36.
And we give all of our employees a free ticket, right?
We offer each one of our employees a free ticket if they RSVP.
Okay.
They may bring a guest if they're employees, and the guest would pay about $30, which would cover the cost of their meal.
I can't do that, but I can show you that.
This year's theme is country western.
I thought it
was
country, classy country.
Right, it's country. Okay. Right, it's country.
Classy country?
That's what I'd heard.
So there's no drink. Stuff on your shoes?
No, no.
It's country, you can come in and country.
it's dress-up country. It's still semi-formal attire, so.
Sorry.
We're looking for an approval for the contract, well, for a recommendation for the full board for the contract.
Any questions? No questions.
Nope.
Recommendation to the full board.
Thank you.
Next agenda item, please. Thank you.
Item F, state of Connellfield High School, status report of Connellfield High School. Mr. Coronado?
State of the campus.
What do we got here?
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board, Dr. Delavis, members of the cabinet. Hopefully you can see this and this works from this point. First, thank you for allowing me to serve the community and present this state of the campus. First, I'll give a historical review, things that you, I'm sure that you're aware of, but see some common trends that we might see. Here's the agenda. I believe you have been provided with a copy of the packet, but then I will highlight certain things. There's a lot of numbers on here. So basically, where we've been, where we are, where we're going, how do we identify or define a nationally ranked student, some of our campus priorities, and then again, your questions. Again, where have we been? Well, again, you see a historical context. The reason I went back to 2006 was because that was the year that Dunningfield High School was located where it's at today. Some of the significant numbers that I'd like to point out, if you look at it in a longitudinal, is that the 12th grade, 341 students last year. And then if you go back to 2010, 479. It's a 26% decrease in that population. And again, likewise.
341 is which one? That's last year's?
Yes, sir.
What's this year's?
Total? 389. And I'll go over those numbers specifically.
Okay, yeah.
And then if you see 320, but yet that cohort started with 461 students. So there's a significant loss in those numbers. I'd like to point out the average SAT score. There was a significant increase in 2011 and 2012. However, in 2013, only 56 students took the SAT. As of today, so far, 129 have taken the SAT and 67 have taken an ACT. Economically disadvantaged, looks like it's pretty steady at about 75%. Our ELLs are under 13%, and our at-risk population is just under 50%. But those are some significant numbers. 2009, not sure what happened there, but the disciplinary placements to DAEP were almost 20% of the school population. Those numbers have significantly decreased over time. Again, some tax data for you. Again, when we did the transition, when the state did the transition from TOS to tax, there was a significant decrease. Of course, the longer a test is in session, the better students get. So again, and you see that natural trend. Dunningfield High School actually did very well towards the later parts of the tax era. And again, a lot of this data is first administration. Typically, any time after the second, third, or fourth administration, we've kind of already taken the hit. Really doesn't matter. The passing percentage is significantly lower. Again, this slide here, it shows that we struggled to get all kids to pass all tests. So in other words, some kids did better on other tests, but there were still some kids that struggled passing all tests. And again, you see that for all grades tested down at the bottom. Comparatively, well, I'll go to EOC data on the next slide. Again, significantly low. Again, this is a new test. First year, the test came out. It was kind of a shock to a lot of folks. But I always try to compare our data with the state data. And again, you've seen these numbers before during the TABOR report that was given to you. But clearly, our English reading and writing are significantly low. We are competitive in Algebra 1 and Biology.
I see our English is still on not the best, English 1 especially.
That's correct.
Action.
And we're getting killed in the writing, but and I'll address some of those.
Okay.
Again, our exit tax, this is what really counts. I compared this to the region and the state. Again, the longer the tax is in session, the better we do. I do want to do want to highlight the average passing score. The minimum passing score is 2100, so 2200 meant that the students were college ready. So again, the tax, comparatively, we figured out the test at this point, and so we've done fairly well. The EOC, on the other hand, significant drops. Our concern here is that the percentage of students that actually pass the class, for example, in English reading and writing, in both English 1 and 2, 82 and 87% respectively, pass the class, yet if you look at the numbers for the folks that actually pass the course. Wow. So in other words, there's no alignment. So how do we explain to parents, well, you pass, your kid's passing the class, but he can't pass the EOC when the class is supposed to be aligned with the EOC? Our Algebra 1, again, 74% passed and 77% passed the campus. So, you know, the alignment, that tells us that the alignment is good, so all we have to do is increase the rigor, and that'll hopefully increase the passing percentage. And the same thing with biology.
So English, reading and writing, which to me, and I know to some of my fellow board members, is the most important thing that we can focus on. I would imagine you have a plan to address that.
And we're doing that right now, sir.
Awesome. All right. Because that is, that's concerning right there. 82% pass, but only 30% pass the writing, 48 pass the reading. That's English 1, English 2, 87% pass the class, but 36 percent passed on writing and 68% on reading. I mean, we're not doing these kids any service and we're setting them up for failure.
Yes, sir.
Because they can probably do math, but they can't speak and they can't write. I mean,
and correct. It's not like we have a mobile society. These are the same kids we've had all along.
Yep.
And that's systemic and that's a major problem.
Yep.
And as I alluded to in the initial slide with the data, the decrease in the cohorts, you see that what they started with and what they ended up with. And again, our numbers are significantly lower than the region and the state. Here's our preliminary testing data. This is where our challenges are as we see. And again, the what you see passing the first semester at the end of December, again, we have some high passing rates. However, we do have a high number of testers, and what the logistics to test, for example, 680 English 1 writing. That's a culmination of first-time freshmen, Jesus, sophomores that didn't pass, and juniors that still need to pass the EOC. So we still have a lot of folks that still need to pass those tests. So basically at 680 students, that's 35 classrooms, that's 70 teachers. It's a lot of the logistics behind testing that many people, and if you look at the and that's the high one. I mean the low ones in biology and U.S. history, U.S. history specifically, and it's the first time tester.
Let me ask you something. This preliminary test, what is it? A state test?
Yes, sir. This is the actual EOC.
This is the actual EOC. By preliminary, you're just saying this is what we're currently receiving back.
These are the numbers that still need to test to graduate, sir.
Okay, thank you.
And if you look in the first column, the required retesters, basically those are the people that still need to pass the test the first, it'd be the third iteration. So where are we now? This is our seniors. We currently have three cohorts enrolled in Ganithia High School, which is 389 students. We've already taken a hit on the 26 students that you see on the bottom. Those cohort 2013 and 2012, those 26 students, we've already taken the hit on those. So we're focusing on the 363 that are in cohort 2014. Of those three, only 344 are classified as juniors, 14 are seniors rather, 14 are classified as juniors, and then we have four sophomores and one freshman from that cohort. Statistically, they will not graduate. Those five students will not graduate. They are out of reach from graduating.
Juniors, are you going to be able to get them?
The juniors, we are working on. Most of those are credit recovery. They didn't, or tax. And on the next slide, I can go over that. Here's how it breaks down. Of the 344, 35 still need to pass tax. And then again, I broke it down underneath on which, how many students need to pass ELA, math, science, and social studies. Again, the 24 students in cohort 2013 and 2012,
Very few tax takers, only five tax takers, and the rest of them are just basically credit recovery. So that total is 368 of the total 12th graders in all three cohorts. Now the juniors, again, cohort 14, there's all of them need tax that are classified as juniors, but also need credits as well. And the same thing with the juniors in 2013-2014, the total was 16. Again, so we estimate that that's 363 students that we're dealing with. 16, we should be able to get those that need credit recovery in there. We're in there, the lab opens at about 7:15 in the morning and it shuts down about 4:30 every day. So credit recovery-wise, I think we're in good shape. We just need to be able to get them to pass tax, and I can go over some of the tax data as well. Again, these are the five students in cohort 14. Again, we have no sophomores or freshmen in those other cohorts. Actually, they'd be aged out anyway. But these five statistically cannot meet graduation requirements.
Madam Chair, I have a question. Are these children that can't pass the tax, are they a special population of any sort?
No, ma'am. They're actually regular ed students, or okay. Special ed students.
Well, I don't mean special ed to speak of, but, you know, could they be ELL? Could they be...
They're a variety of sorts, ma'am, but they have to take the regular test anyway.
But is it, I mean, do you see a pattern of where, gee, this whole group of kids over here?
There's no specific pattern. It's kind of a mixed ELLs. They're
but I mean,
kind of,
you've got how many kids? 20 that you're talking
26?
About? Yeah, that can't pass the tax, or 35? I forget what your number, 35?
35 for a cohort of 2014, and then five for the previous.
And that's who can't pass the tax?
That's who can't.
And so out of those 35, do you see, you know, it's just shotgun blasted kids, or is
yes,
it, there's sure a whole lot of this group, or that group?
And I don't have the breakdown of their demographics.
I would appreciate that.
So 35 are the ones that need to retake the tax?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
They just took their fourth attempt the first week of March.
Wow. That's tough. But I would like to see the breakdown on those 35 kids. Thank you.
Okay. So here's what we anticipate. Of the 363 in 2014, right now 44 are on principal's plans, which means that usually it's attendance, 49 tax, 5 statistically out of graduation. We anticipate 330, 91%. We believe we can hit 91% graduation rate from the cohort. We think we can get about 87% of the cohort 2013 and about 67%. So the number that we anticipate walking on June 10th, 2014 is 352. At the beginning of the year, on the first day of school, August 26th, 2013, only 52% of our population was ready to graduate. So we've made some great strides in getting a lot of this cleaned up and a lot of hard work and effort by the staff at the high school. These are some of our intervention strategies that we're currently using. We have tax intervention strategies, targeted tutoring. We actually have a tax class. These students that need to pass tax are actually in a remediation class. They're in there and all they're doing is focusing on passing that test. Principal plans for credit recovery and attendance. We do have parent buy-in with that. Our attendance has improved significantly. A lot of time it's just seat time that a student is missing. They're doing well in the class, but they need that seat time. Parent contact via phone calls. We've instituted a really large parent campaign calling. If a student misses an assignment within 24 hours, their parent gets contacted to get those turned in. Parent meetings, a lot of parents are starting to come to the campus and so forth. Of the seniors that we were really concerned with, we sent out 157 certified letters. 37 were returned. They were not picked up from the post office or what have you. So now we're calling those students into the office, finding out, making sure that we have the right address, and calling parents to actually come in. And then four of those students that we sent out actually withdrew. We do practice tests quite often. We did our first round in English the first week of March, and then we did the math or algebra, biology, and U.S. history. We did that the first week of March prior to spring break. Very successful. We did see a 30% gain in writing, and I think a large part of that is contributed or attributed to Achieve 3000 and the creative writing that we actually instituted. What we did with the creative writing course is that we looked at what they scored on in eighth grade. If they were struggling in eighth grade, but they were still promoted, they automatically were assigned a creative writing class. It was a way to double block an English class, but focus on writing. So it's helped significantly. We also have six academic tutors, two for core, two ELL, and two minor tutors being paid out of various funds. But those academic tutors are strictly focused in those areas. So we're actually doing a lot this year in identifying those students that are struggling.
Dr. G, you got the black one. We can't see that. You got the colored one over here. I'm watching over here.
Okay, so where we're going. Well, I think we've had a lot of success this year for our first time in 15 years. Our varsity volleyball team has advanced to area. Our marching band actually advanced to regionals. Our football team advanced to regionals. And again, we did have a student go forward to our cross-country basketball team. Math team is one of the best in the state and out in El Paso. Our mariachi program is off to a great start. 37 more students actually registered for the mariachi program for next year. And again, we're still over $1 million worth of scholarships have been offered to our seniors to date. So I think we're really doing well with our scholarship piece and getting our students getting in the college readiness piece. Our state success, again, 67 students. CTE students have advanced to state competition. The FBLA piece went last weekend. We did have one, Giselle Acosta. She's competing at Nationals in Nashville, Tennessee. At a date to be determined. 23 of our band and choir students are advancing to state competition, the most in many years. That's Memorial Day weekend. And two of our DECA students are flying to Atlanta, Georgia to compete in an international competition in Atlanta, Georgia. So we do have a lot of students that are out and about and having a lot of success. The next part is what is to define a nationally ranked student. Again, our mission statement talks about being nationally ranked biliterate graduates. So how did we come up with this mathematical formula? We took the top universities in the country. Actually, we took 57 schools, the Big 12, Big 10, Pac-12, SEC, and the Ivy League. We took those colleges, and we wanted to know what was common for an average student to go into those schools. So out of those 57 schools that our students would most likely to attend, and then this is what we ended up with. Of the top universities, the GPA.
I do have a comment, though. I didn't realize that Texas was a Big 12 top university. Just a comment. Go ahead.
Top university, again, 3.5 GPA. The national average is a 3.0. And what we did is from 2006, we kind of averaged the GPA, and it was 2.92. Class rank, top 25% for top universities, and actually the national average. And the reason I put NA there is because most universities are getting away from class rank. It's really not significant because of the rigor of the curriculum. Most colleges are looking towards curriculum versus where they're at. You can take 4 years of shop and have a high GPA, but you didn't have the rigor of the math and science curriculum. So some of that is a little skewed.
So that CHS 292 GPA, that's all the kids in there?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, which is not bad. Which is not bad at all. However, if you look at the SAT scores, we're significantly lower than either the top universities or the national average. And another thing I'd like to point out are three areas: activities, community service, and the leadership. Right now, the top universities require a written statement, some activities, and community service, and I think that's a piece that we're missing. Currently, nearly 38% of our students are involved in something.
On the community service, though, art clubs, Honor Society requires community service, FFA requires community service. Many of these drop down when the leadership diversity, 24 clubs and organization, they're requiring that community service. So that's not totally true.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct on some of the clubs, but when we did this, it's not a requirement for all. For example, in Isleta ISD, and I don't want to compare, but they require community service for all graduates, for all students. So it's not just those in NHS or Student Council or any of the other club organizations. It's for all students. It's a graduation requirement.
But it's not. I guess what I'm saying is if you want to go to the university, you can get that instead of having it as a required course in school. Our students are getting it through, how am I going to get that community service? I'm in Honor Society. I've got it done. Check that one off.
That's correct. It's just not required, and that's all.
Okay. But our students more than have the opportunity, correct? The
opportunities exist, but as a district, we do not make it a requirement.
Yes, I realize that, but it exists. It's there. Okay.
And we do have 20, there are many opportunities for our students to be involved. Mm-hmm. But those are the three areas that we think that we could
which is a little button.
Improve. Our core curriculum actually is competitive because the state has adopted a 4x4. However, with the new foundational plan, it is a little bit different because of the endorsement. So we have to really look at that to make sure that we have a pathway to college and not just an endorsement. So I think that overall, we have the curriculum and we have the staff to support the curriculum for our students to become nationally. So here's how we defined this. We kind of took this and we all balled this up. Again, what we think a nationally ranked student is a student that graduates with a 3.1 GPA, has an average SAT score of 1587, and an ACT score of 23, either or. With the SAT going to a different test for the class of 2017, of course, these numbers are going to be changing as well. We do want to increase our student participation in clubs to about 50%. We would like to require 100 hours of community service for all students, not just our students involved in clubs. But also, I'd like to point out the 12 college credit hours for dual credit and AP. Basically, if you look at this nationally ranked student, it basically, under the old Distinguished Achievement Plan, graduation plan, it falls under that because it also adds the 3-year foreign language, which also adds to our mission statements of our students being biliterate. The other thing is that the SAT and the ACT is not a graduation requirement. We think it should be, but if we make it a requirement, then that means we're going to have to pay for it. Even though there are some with waivers, then many students can get those for free, depending on their staff.
Is there an estimated cost and how much that would cost us on a yearly basis?
It actually, sir, that all depends on who we're going to target to make that requirement. But we might be able to get it waivers for about 75% of our population only because of it's based on the free and reduced lunch, and that's 75% of our population. So about 25% of our population would actually probably.
I'd love to see if we could get a number. I mean, we're currently in budgeting, so I'd love to see what that would cost to see if we could get ACT and ACT covered.
And it's not only taking the test, but also providing the support during
of course,
the year.
Of course. And, I mean, I'd love to see the round number, not just here's the cost of the test. No, here's the preparation.
Support.
I actually have those numbers for you. But
I knew you would. I figured you would.
I believe that we have got policy that says every child, if you could, I mean, I believe we have board policy that says every kid will leave this district having taken the SAT or the ACT test, and that the district will pay for it. And
I recall something to that.
And that was written back probably like in 1999.
It's something of a policy. I would agree we'd need to start instituting it.
If not, maybe we can
if somehow it fell by the wayside, if someone could please see, and if it has fallen by the wayside, we need to...
Since 2006, that hasn't been the case.
And that's the sad part, is that preparing for these tests actually helps.
Yeah.
Across the board.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. But if you look at the second slide or third slide, I believe, in your packet, it has the number of students that actually have taken the test.
Yeah, not too many. But also, are we going to come up with a class or tutoring?
Yes, ma'am, I have that in my... Good. I still have that in the priorities.
Good. So. Everyone ask any questions.
Okay. Feel free to interrupt me anytime, ma'am.
We will.
So, okay.
Okay. Any more questions, then?
No, thank you.
It's on the priority.
Okay. Okay, on our priorities, first of all, is to keep our campus safe. I do agree with the fence around the... it would also help prevent students from really running from the security.
Running?
Lunchtime.
They run from...
They run from the security.
Do they run north, south? Where do they run?
They actually go behind the... into the... I guess there's... where
east,
the water goes
west,
a pond.
Ponding.
Oh, the ponding area on the west.
Ponding area on the,
yes,
on the backside.
Yeah.
They go there, and there's a little, you know, I've been in there, there's a little cave, and there's
the clubhouse.
It's a clubhouse. there's all kinds of things in there that you probably don't want to know about.
So are any of those kids blocked for the track team?
No. Every time we have a turf sweep, I always get the fastest kids, and I ask them if they're in track. So
yeah,
we do promote our athletics as well.
So you would agree that a fencing would resolve a lot of these issues?
I would totally support
razor wire? No reason. I'm joking.
So I think it's a good thing. It keeps... it doesn't only keep them in, it keeps other people out. So.
Yeah.
That's true.
The other thing is, I'd like to point out our staff development. Let's see if I can get this to work here. Increase our professional development for our staff.
Right.
I'd like to, I know this, you'd be jumping around here, but I do want to point out, these are the numbers of Title II. Again, Title II funds that are used for professional development at the high school over the last 3 years. Very, very little has been done. Same thing with our local funds. But I think this slide is all telling. For this year, we had $10,600 in staff development. That comes out to less than $100 per staff member. I really think that we need to improve the dollars that we invest in our teachers. And again, I'm working with finance and CNI to do a lot of those things. Also improve the quality of technology available to staff. Right now, a lot of our students receive, we have COWS, computer on wheels, we have iPads, we have a lot of infrastructure for our students. We've just updated the Wi-Fi system. However, the computers and technology that's available to the staff, it can't communicate very well with that. So in other words, the students have better technology than...
I have a question about that, because I mean, my wife's a teacher at an elementary school, and she's dealing with a 5-6-year-old laptop. I'm sure that's very similar to what you're seeing at the high school. These systems are outdated, and I know we used to have a 2-year plan to cycle them through. Obviously, that hasn't been taking place. Is this what's going on in your campus?
Absolutely. Actually, in a conference call a few weeks ago, Mr. Flores says, well, all of your computers are Windows XP.
Mm-hmm.
He says, if we upgrade them to Windows 7, of course, now there's Windows 8. If we upgrade them to Windows 7 to better communicate with the Wi-Fi, it's not going to work, because Windows 7 takes up too much of its memory, working memory. So we do have a plan, and I don't know if this is going to come across. I'm sure it will come across your dais there regarding an upgrade in this technology for staff. And I did request 100 laptops for our teachers. My goal would be to provide them with very new laptops, some printers and some copy machines, and I think that will facilitate a lot of things. Also, again, going back to this professional development, I think we really need to invest in our teachers, not just in their professional development, but also the equipment that we have.
I will say there's a lot of teachers and professionals dumping coffee onto their current ones just to get new ones. So.
Well, they don't have new ones yet, so we don't have them, so it's it's a little bit difficult. Again, quality instruction in every classroom every day, I think that's critical. We're in the classrooms a lot, that's a focus. APs need to be instructional leaders first. I harp on them a lot.
Let me ask you about your APs. Do your APs follow your grade?
I'm sorry?
Do your APs stay with the grade that they start with? In other words, freshman moves up to sophomore moves up to job.
So that's called looping. There's a lot of discussions and research based on looping. Mm-hmm. Looping only works if you have an effective teacher or instructional leader. We are not. My plan is not to loop, and the reason for that. And in fact, I got a lot of resistance initially because I didn't want to loop because I believe education is a relay. We're always handing our students off to someone else, and part of the problem. Last year when the counselors looped with their kids, for example, that also gave the counselors 4 years. Well, I got 4 years to deal with this kid. I got 4 years to do this, and I got 4 years. Well. This year without looping, it's you got 1 year. You have to get them ready in 1 year so that you can pass off a good product to the next person. So it creates a little bit better sense of urgency, if you will, to get those students ready. And now they're starting to see it. If you speak to some of the APs and the counselors now, they're starting to realize, wow, if I only could do it another year, this is what I would do different. So by looping them, they're not gonna do it differently. They're not gonna do it better. But now they're already thinking about how they can manage their time better, how they can manage students better. Another argument is as well, relationships. The students don't get an opportunity to establish a relationship. Well, what I would argue is that, here's an example, another one. Last year, only one counselor exists. So what happened to the, when you have turnover, you're still going to have some relationship building all over again. So if you do have, if we are stable enough, with our counselors, for example. So a student now is going to establish a relationship with four counselors or five counselors because of the CTE counselor that we have versus just that one counselor for 1 year. And oh, by the way, they decide to leave. So again, we just think that having some sort of stability in relationship building, I think, is key.
The stability is better than relationship building. It sounds like they get better over time versus passing the buck. Well, I can do it again next year, or I can focus on Pedro this year versus Maria this year.
Okay. And I always encourage them to talk to each other, too, because let's say, for example, next year a junior becomes a senior, and now that junior counselor and the senior counselor can actually communicate about that one student. Hey, did you know about this, or did you know about that, or you probably need to know about this. They're still a go-to person at the counseling center. And the same thing with the APs. There's that building of relationships, and I really encourage the counselor and because every AP is assigned, every counselor is assigned to an AP. So I really encourage that bond to make things happen, and that counselor needs to be involved in all discipline and so forth. So
thank you. I appreciate that.
One of the other things that we'd like to do to improve instruction. It is implement the Avid system. This is a very expensive system. I know we used to have it before, and it is a system. The initial cost probably is upwards towards, well, the Avid system itself is about $5,000 for the library fees because of the books and the literature that comes with that, and there's a $3,000 licensing fee. And after that, it's really about professional development. So the plan, that we're working on now is to send 18 teachers and administrators to the Avid training in Dallas starting in June 23rd. We'd like to get those trained and bring that back to the high school. Again, this goes back to investing in our professional development, and we can take Avid school-wide. Likewise, I think with Avid, we start with a cohort of 240 students, 120 incoming freshmen, and 120 incoming sophomores. So that our initial cost would be, I estimate, about $40,000 to $45,000, but the return of investment on that is priceless. But evidently there was an Avid system here before.
Yeah. That's what we're discussing.
Ms.
What happened to it?
Excuse me. Can you find out why we did away with Avid?
Yeah.
When I asked preliminary, I guess it was due to the budget cuts in 2009. No. And that's what they told me. But we'll investigate and we'll give you a report on Thursday.
Yeah, the pros and cons.
It was one of the budget reductions with the stakeholder committee.
But what were the pros and cons? Why? I know that was one of the recommendations. Why was the recommend? Why they went through and. What were the pros and cons about it?
Can you just provide some more info on what the audit system is?
Can you do that? Can you offer it?
And we'll provide some AVID material.
Sure.
On what it,
why did it get the axe before? Because I remember it well.
Yeah, I remember we used to have it. That's what I was telling you. Yeah.
Still the freshman here, so it's before my time.
You're a sophomore.
you're not a freshman anymore.
I'm getting enough credits.
You're not too
late. We do still have some teachers that were AVID trained. We did have the assistant director come down and visit with us before spring break and basically said the AVID system has really changed a lot. But a lot of that is a professional development piece that we really want to invest in our teachers that we think our students will be benefited from. Improving our end-of-course exam scores, again, this is something that we'd like to do as well. Obviously, it is a graduation requirement. It's not going to go away. And using the Teach Resource System, I'd like to send teachers to that conference in August. And again, so with the AVID system training in June, the Teach Resource Conference, different teachers that go to that and you know, we get a bulk of our teachers that are trained, and then when we come back for in-service, a lot of this information can be shared with one another, and we can really soar for next year. Increasing dual credit and the AP program so that every student graduates with at least 12 college credit hours. We are expanding our dual credit program as we speak. We just received another candidate today. Ms. Martinez, she's our cheerleading sponsor. Actually, she was awarded dual credit in government, and she's actually a science teacher. So she's got a challenge government test, and now she can teach dual credit government. And that's actually, we own the teacher now, versus what we call, a proctor or a facilitator. We do have a couple facilitators, but basically the online instructor is away at EPCC. But I just don't think that that's a good program, given our proximity to EPCC. So basically, if we have any vacancies, we're going to pursue those that have that can be credentialed with El Paso Community College. So that's our position there.
Madam Chair, could I ask a question?
Ms. Laurie.
Mr. Coronado, could you provide the board how many teachers are teaching in their subject area that they're qualified to teach in Yale? Do you have a math teacher teaching history? Do you have a history teacher teaching PE, or is everybody teaching?
Everyone is teaching in their certified areas. Right.
Every
now.
Single one?
Every single one. We don't have a teacher out of their content area.
That's incredible. Thank you. And that you know that is even better. Thank
was
you.
Was that in place before you showed up? Or is
no,
that
sir.
Something you did?
That was something we did. In fact, I can give you a really good example. Ms. Royce, I'm sure she won't mind me using her name, Ms. Royce, was an English 3 teacher, yet last year 90% of her kids failed a tax. But when in talking to Ms. Royce, I just started talking with her, and she's got a degree in creative writing. Wow, imagine that. So we put her in a position where she can be successful. So this year we gave her a creative writing class, and she just took off, and now she's helping the other teachers with the creative writing piece. So a lot of it is just about knowing the teacher and putting them in a position so they can be successful.
Wow.
So it's totally secure in saying that 100% of those teachers are teaching
ma'am.
In the right. That is fabulous. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Increase our college entrance exam scores, our ACT and SATs, by creating a semester preparation course. I met with Princeton Review this morning. They are in 17 of the 22 large high schools in El Paso. They are in all of PPISD, all of Isleta, and they are making its way into Socorro. There are a few schools in Socorro that have the Princeton Review. the gains that they can guarantee are 4 points on an ACT and over 200 points on an SAT.
In the reading and the writing?
It's the reading and the writing and the math. So
in each subject?
In each subject. In each subject. So basically, wow. the way it works is it's a teacher. We're actually paying for a contracted teacher to come in and provide those services. Now, they did give us an estimate. Now, the plan, though, is not to offer it to all students, and I can tell you why. The intent is to offer it to a minimum of 25% of our students, and that would be the top 25% of our students, because 80% of all graduates from this area stay in El Paso. So there's no need for them to increase their ACT or SAT scores. As long as they can pass the TSI, be in dual credit, they're going to go to 90% of those students, what they gave you, 90%, 91% of Bounty Deal High School graduates go to El Paso Community College their first year.
91%?
91%. So if we focus, and a lot of that is attributed to the low SAT and ACT scores because they can't go anywhere else. So
Sorry to interrupt you. What are you going to do if someone requests it?
Then, well, we have to look. We want to make sure that student is going to be successful. That's the first thing. You know, it's not, you know, like Avid is for your middle-of-the-road students, and your Princeton Review has to be for those higher-end students that are actually going to go away. Now, we're not going to deny somebody an opportunity for a class. The way we capped it, we figured it financially, is 108 students per semester. Now, since we need to make up, which, believe it or not, is a very large percentage of a graduating class. So, and in fact, we don't even think we can get 108 students that actually want to take the class, but we think we can get 108 students. So to answer your question, Madam Chair, is that if they request it, we think we're going to have room. The class can be up to 25. When we pay for it, we pay for it by class versus by student. So we capped it at 18, only to make it manageable. But we can add more there. Some classes have 25 students, for example.
So this could be a class basically given every period, every day.
We would offer it second through seventh period. We're going to have an eight period day. So we would offer it second through sixth period. We would not do it first period or eighth period because of athletics. It just wouldn't work, but that also gives the Princeton Review teacher an opportunity for planning and so forth. But basically that teacher is also an additional counselor on campus. That counselor, once, for example, next year, our senior class with 108 students, seniors, would actually be enrolled in this class. That ACT would be taken during the second week or the first week of December. And so those last 3 weeks before Christmas break, that's when they're doing their scholarships, their essays, and so forth. The reason Cathedral had 19 gates, were 19 Gates finalists, Gates Scholarly? The Gates finalists, is they actually have a class. In other words, for the entire semester, all they do is work on their application. And then at the end of, right before their Christmas break, they hit send on their application. But it's a constant process, and that's why they constantly get so many. And similarly, we would do the same. Basically, that college readiness class would be doing just that.
In junior year, basically?
And for next year, it would be their juniors, 108 juniors for their spring. And then the following year, it would be nothing but juniors.
Okay.
So it would be, that would be the plan. But again, the cost is quite extensive. I can give you that number if you like. But
okay, what is the number?
Okay, it's about $48,000 a semester.
That's
but
it.
That's all books, materials, the test, and everything else. Most of the schools that are paying for it right now are using high school allotment, Title I, GT, because some of those kids are going to be higher end kids and so forth.
Can you make sure that number gets to us for budgeting, please?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, anything you can do to prep, I mean, especially. First off, we need to learn about the Avid system, you know, what it's going to entail and why we got rid of it. But prepping with Princeton Review, I mean, would take us through the roof, I think, personally.
Yes, sir. And the other
it's
thing is...
worth
is
a try, right?
Mm-hmm. And that was one model. The model was they provide the instructor. The second model is that we train a teacher. And then it's... My suggestion would be that we train a teacher after our first year, and what we do is we incorporate that teacher as the AVID teacher as well for the third year. So now we're getting, we're preparing ACT through Princeton Review, and we're preparing the SAT version through AVID, and we really hit both of them, and we can start doing it the third year. Well, maybe the second year.
Wow.
So it would really be a double win.
So your recommendation is starting next year to get this new teacher for the fall semester?
Yes,
bring
sir.
Him in for the fall semester for the full year for juniors?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I sure like this, you know, committee to recommend that to Dr. Galavis to be budgeted for.
For sure.
We're meeting next Monday to talk about, he's already submitted his plan, so...
And do you just want it for one semester, or you want it for two?
No, I want it for every year. So
every,
we're looking at
all year.
So it's 48 a semester or 48 the year?
48
no, the semester.
For a semester, so you're talking 96 for the full year.
That's correct.
Okay, okay.
That's correct.
That's the number that we're looking at. It's still worth it.
It's
we're just,
absolutely.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that we understood it.
It's per year.
Take it for saving on summer school.
So, yeah. Yeah, there you go.
I don't want to go there, but...
There you go. We can use a lot of, you know, I wouldn't encourage us to use any local funds for this because there's enough other people's money out there that mm-hmm. we could use to pay for this. Again, this also goes in line with increasing the number of scholarship opportunities for all students and then increase the number of career technical certifications. One of our concerns for the career technical certifications is right now we're spread a little thin. And in order for us to be great at something, you know, I always ask the question, what do we want to be great at? What do we want to be known for? And right now, we're okay in a lot of different things, but we're not great at even one thing or any two things. So we discuss, the discussion right now is about academies and trying to focus on those endorsements and so forth. So we want to really focus on what we really want to do as a campus and as a high school. The other part is the student leadership course curriculum. There's actually a course that's developed by the Texas Association of Student Council that's supported by the Texas Association of Secondary School Principals. And that is the student leadership piece that also it aligns itself with the nationally ranked student. This would be our leaders. This would be an actual leadership course out of our social studies department. There's an actual curriculum for this is supported, and there's also actual high school credit that TEA recognizes, and it goes through its circuit every year, and it's approved every year. So again, our National Honor Society students, our student council, all of our leaders, basically, would be a part of this class. It'd be a one-semester class, and we thought about piggybacking this class along with the Princeton Review. So in other words, students would go Princeton Review fall, and they'd do student leadership in the spring. And vice versa, they would do student leadership in the fall, and then they would do the Princeton Review in the spring. So that's what we're looking at. Again, there is the only cost of that is buying the curriculum, which is very inexpensive. It's less than $500, and we buy that through the state. Okay, so finally, I like this quote, greatness is not a function of circumstance. Greatness, it turns out, is largely a matter of conscious choice and discipline. To be great, we also must be stable and sustainable. Our current juniors have had three principals in the last 3 years. Gaudetio High School has had six principals in the last 10. We can't be great without stability and sustainability. So I encourage us to at least have a good plan and move forward together and at least create greatness. Because I think we are surely capable of doing that and also doing it. So subject to your questions, that completes the state of the campus for Gaudetio High School.
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation.
I think we asked enough questions in between.
Okay, next agenda item, please.
Madam Chair, this agenda item we're going to remove, given the what was submitted to the public and the agenda is different from the memorandum.
Approval of the contract with Region 4?
No, well, it should be approval of contract with the National Math and Science Initiative.
Okay, so we're going to pull the agenda item?
We're going to bring it back in April.
Okay, thank you. Next agenda item, Carlos?
Item H, approval of contract with Region 4 ESC for math content training.
Good evening, Committee Chair Gonzalez, committee members, Dr. Galavis. We're bringing this item to you for approval for a contract with Region 4.
Good evening. So as you know, next school year, our K through 8 mathematics curriculum is going to be completely revamped. And so this is in response to that. This is professional development training for all our K-8 teachers so they can know and be adept and to understand what the new TEK alignment is going to be for each of the grade levels. So essentially, our math TEKs are going to change next year. That's a major shift. So we're working proactively now to contract these services to provide that professional development to our teachers when we come back.
When will this take place? In August?
August, yes, sir.
It's part of our regular...
No, it's going to be the week before teachers show up.
So a week before, and this is required of all teachers?
Well, we are strongly urging.
Strongly encouraging.
Yes, urging that they come, because it's obviously a major change in their curriculum. And if I'm a professional, and I know many of our teachers are, willing professionals, I want to be kept abreast of what the changes are, because pretty much, if I've been a third grade teacher or fifth grade teacher, those TEKs are not going to be the same. They're going to change.
Let me ask you something. All right, I guess this might be a question to our human resources. Is she still here? Ms. Carrasco?
No? She just stepped out.
She just stepped out. My concern is the requirement of such a field outside of their existing contract. They have a certain amount of hours. Is it possible, because most of them aren't yearly rewrites, I think we actually do that in April, to addend or append to this contract the requirement for this, because it would be additional paid
Yes,
training? So we'll be paying them and not only just getting that, right?
Yeah, we're paying them, and the way it is right now, is the rate is $80 a day for professional development. It's a difference. It's not $35 at summer school per hour. It's $80 per day. So I know there's some pushback on that, but that's what it is on the policy right now as it stands.
I think that's my only concern, is if it's not within their normal contract, to maybe append it, that we're saying we're revamping, and this is what we're going to do, and you're going to be paid X amount because we're going in this direction.
Right.
I would just be very concerned that they're going to say, well, it's not my contract. I don't need to show up.
But part of leadership is also making people understand and making sense of why are we doing this. Ultimately, it's for their betterment as professionals. And I understand that, and we've already talked about this in DAC, because if you recall, when we were trying to do the calendar, I was trying to get extra waiver days to address this. But when we looked at the waiver days, by adding extra waiver days, we would have been like something like $300,000 in the hole. So in my mind, I couldn't feasibly, responsibly say, hey, let's do this. So I had to take it back. This is our plan D. So we're proposing, and the reason why we're taking it this early to you, if approved, hopefully at the board meeting, we want to give the teachers ample time and notice to make plans accordingly now. That way there is no issues in August. Because this is very important. I mean, pretty much our whole curriculum is going to change. The TEKS resources is going to update the changes, and it just makes sense, prudent sense, to make sure that we inform our teachers of the changes coming.
Ms. Carrasco? Did you hear? I just saw her walking back in.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're aware of what Mr. Basurto is requested in terms of this math content and alignment of math TEKS and training at $80 a day. Is that already written into a teacher's professional contract that we redo with them every year?
That we do?
In other words, in April, when we renew majority of our teacher contracts, or non-renewed, administrative recommendations, for the renews, does it include this $80 per day that we would pay for professional development outside of their contract days?
No, it doesn't.
Is there a way to change the contract?
Their contract is for the days that we compensate them for.
Correct.
187 compensated days, or
As I was explaining to Dr. Galavis, our contracts now are written in months, 10-month contracts, 12-month contracts, so they're in months now.
And that's
For compensation purposes, it's based on the 187 days.
But the question is, how many days are you looking for, Ms. Postwick?
It's going to be 3 days.
3 days.
3 days.
So those three additional days outside of the 187,
they're going to get paid $80.
There would be staff development. It's like a stipend. It's out of the stipend list, and it's a staff development.
But it's not a required, correct?
Yeah. No, it's not required.
And then the concern is, if you don't make it required, you're never going to get full buy-in.
No.
My question to you, is it possible to change those contracts to reflect the additional four? Highly recommended, but completely up to their, you know.
You would have to change, add three or four more days of compensation to their salaries.
Well, 3 days at that $80, 40, or 4 days of whatever, $80 a day, could that be written in as professional development outside of their normal 187?
I was talking to Dr. Galavis a little earlier before this meeting about how the contracts now are in months. And he threw a question at me. For example, we were discussing how graduation is outside of the date.
Yeah.
You know, if it's on the 9th, the graduation, the last day of school is on the 9th, and graduation is on the 10th. Well, as a result of that course of that court hearing regarding that battle when they made this one teacher come in, then that's when our contracts changed to months. So we haven't really tested our district where we make them come back in because it's in months. But I will run that through legal counsel, and I will get back to you, and I will throw in not only the question that Dr. Galavis had, but also the question of training, and I will ask about that.
Outside the normal teacher development that already comes into play a week before campus is opened, the concern is these three additional, not working days, but development days that are actually structured and compensated differently. I mean, $80 a day instead of the per hour that they're currently getting paid on the days.
Yes,
I think that's important.
That when, for example, Saturday
yes.
trainings and stuff like that, then that's the extra compensation they get for staff development that is already designated in our...
But I think my concern is it's not making it a requirement.
Yes. They could very well say
it's not required, and so I'm not going to show up.
Yeah.
And here we have no buy-in. I want buy-in. You bring in brand new system. We put all our trust in this new system, but yet our contracts aren't supporting this brand new system. So I want to make sure that legally we can go out there and require them or strongly encourage them to come in, and you know they get not only $80.
So other methods, and the one pushback that we did get during that, because I think pretty much in that the feedback isn't positive, because we did try to make it systematic, so nobody could not participate.
Exactly.
Thank you. Except I couldn't recommend it if we're going to lose $300,000 because we're going to add two extra waiver days. I can't make that. I'm sorry. I just can't make that recommendation on $300,000 for two extra waiver days. That's how much more than we were going to lose.
For waiver days, but if you go to this $80 a day.
Well, so this is plan B. And so I guess what I'm saying is the feedback that I've gotten to this point has been positive. Most of those teachers want this training because they know this is in their best interest for themselves professionally and for the kids, because ultimately that's what we're here for. And I'm a strong believer that most adults in our system are here for kids. So I treat them as such.
What's the cost at $80 a day for 3 days?
Well, we're looking at our K-8 teachers. And I don't have that in front of me, but I can provide you a summary. But I know that the feedback was from teachers is that they felt that the $80 per day pay rate is too low at this point.
So even the rate that we're compensating may not be attractive enough to make it...
Exactly. So that was something that I was probably going to address to the committee to see if we can possibly bump it up a little so we can get more. But what we can do is we can work with our principals and keep continuing to send a message and continue to... communicate to our teachers that this is why we're doing this. This is what it's always. I've been doing that already, and I'll continue to do that to continue to sell it. Because I don't think just mandating people do it because I said so is good enough. I think sometimes we got to provide.
I understand buy-in, but at some point it has to meet the
agreed.
The compensation side of it
and
as
so
well.
So right here, we're just proposing that this amount. And of course, we're going to ask teachers to sign up, and we're having a discussion as we ask teachers to sign up. How can we hold them accountable once they sign up? So that's something that we're going to kind of look at and see how we can kind of get more.
I have a suggestion.
Yes.
Can you bring us what the surrounding districts are paying?
On the PD base?
Yeah.
And we can look into that.
That would be great, because then we can go back to our personnel and say, you're getting compensated fairly well, or if not, we bring it up a bit.
$35 an hour, and I know we're not topic, summer school, it's pretty darn good. $35 an hour.
We're second in the county, so I'm glad for that.
I can go ahead and double check through TASB that I have access to, where I can go and look to see what kind of stipends are being paid at other districts.
For professional development.
Yes, in regards to professional development. But I can tell you that we'll look at that.
Okay.
And then I'll look at the question about the contracts. I'll talk to Steve about that.
Yes.
And then also, just want to say that, as a district, I think that we've been doing very well in our compensation and in our benefits to our employees. And I can tell you that...
They're very happy. My wife's very happy about that.
They have used us in other districts. They're using us, teacher unions are using us as an
example. That's what I was about to say.
When they're talking about, the high standards and what we've done. And, they're using us as a model and saying this is where...
That's awesome.
We want
insurance.
Insurance.
One last question, Ms. Carrasco. You said that our contracts were rewritten to counter this graduation day from days, 187 days, to months. Can you explain that a little further?
In other words, before this legal battle that resulted as of the teacher being asked to come in a day after their contract,
graduation.
The contracts before were written, for example, a teacher's contract was 187 days.
It actually had days.
Specified 187 days. So that was where the battle was with this one teacher, that coming in that at the day for graduation would be 188. So they said, that was where the battle was on that. So TASB came back, and the recommendation after that was resolved is that now the contracts read 10 months. It will not say a number of days. It says 10 months. So, basically, based on that, now if we were to get the same situation where, we're asking teachers to come in.
They've already signed a contract. It's 10 months.
Then they can come in. And I know Dr. Valeriz talked about summer school and what other things can we make them do for 10 months.
It's on the record. It's too late.
I think it's a very viable idea that we need to explore. And I think we've not gone down that path, and maybe we should start looking at that. As our pay and our benefits get better, it's kind of a little bit of a give and take. And if we ask them to come in one more day or two more days or three more days, it should be something.
I think that's the difference between a push and a shove.
Right.
And you have to really kind of meter yourself on that one. I would definitely say 3 days is a push. Coming in for summer school is a shove. That's a completely different animal. 3 days of development that makes you better, that's a push to yourself. A shove, you have to do this. That to me is a little bit stretching that 10 month, because where does the 10 month begin? Middle of August? So that means in middle of June it stops.
And then also remember that in the teaching profession, you've got to have X number of hours of continuing education or CEs, and so that's like an opportunity that the district is offering the employee to come in to be able to get those hours.
I think if anything, just a comparison of the neighboring districts, what they're paying for professional development, and see how that goes.
I'll look at that.
Thank you.
Not me.
Huh?
No.
Okay.
He just gives us a lot of ideas.
So you'll bring back that information?
Yes, Ms. Godas was going to research
that. If you can send it to us on the Thursday packet.
Yes.
And then the recommendation of this is, what are you recommending?
For approval?
For approval?
22-7? I would go ahead and recommend for approval.
Okay.
Recommend. Thank you so much.
Kitchen.
Report for approval.
22-7.
Next agenda item, please.
Item I, approval professional services contract with Ramona Torres Snow SLP Services Mr. Gavin.
Okay, this item is just to approve the contract with Ms. Snow for her speech language pathology services.
Okay. Any questions?
Is this for 1 year?
It's for 50, let's see, how many hours is it for on the contract? 32 hours a week for 11 weeks.
I mean, is this...
Because we have 11 weeks remaining, or...?
Is this for the rest of the year? Or for...
Yes, this is for the rest of the year.
Oh, just for the rest of the year?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's where I was kind of like, not understanding.
Actually, beginning, we've already contracted with the first semester, right? And this, okay. Since this is exceeding the 10,000, that's why we're bringing it to you.
And in your judgment, is this an area that we need to look at for next year? Because obviously you've contracted through the rest of the year. Is this something we need to just add for next year?
Yes.
Okay. Is it just one, or do we need more than just one?
We have four on contract right now. This mm-hmm. is a continuation. We had two contract SLPs back out on contract.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm asking to extend hers so we can work on the makeup therapy.
Wow.
She's done a great job. That's why we're
bringing her. I have a question. I thought we were okay now with the SLPs, no?
We have five contracted SLPs.
Contracted, meaning?
Well, I mean,
employees?
Five district SLPs.
Okay.
But due to the increase in numbers of students receiving speech therapy, we're going to be asking for more SLPs for next year.
Okay, so she might not need to come back as contracted. You might have...
Not next year. We'll evaluate where we are next year in staffing. So she should.
Okay.
Come in as contract, she's come in as an
My
employee.
My question now, Martha, is she earning more than a regular employee?
29,000 for 11 weeks.
Well, I know that.
What does that work out to?
Because if we, we do need to consider hiring.
More SLP over that year, yes.
I'll go ahead and look at that. But it is contract services, and we are fully staffed currently with our SLPs. I believe I had heard from a previous presentation that the services were behind.
Yeah, this is makeup speech therapy.
This is makeup therapy.
So why do we need another speech therapist for next year? I mean, I thought this was going to bring us up to par. And
yes, but I believe based on the TASB study, there was a need for, because of the caseload for each one of the SLPs that we currently have, apparently the number is pretty high as compared to a state average. And the recommendation.
The kids that are the services? Or?
Yeah, yes, the caseload for the SLPs. So I believe that even with the TASB study, even being fully staffed as we are, the recommendation was still that we increase either by one or two more SLPs for next year. And so that recommendation will be coming forth to you in our...
Was that part of our report?
It was part of the TASB report.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay. It did show a high number of caseloads, and it even recommended like an 8. For SLPs, for optimal, I guess. Was
yeah,
it?
There were SLPs and aides, special ed aides, and so there were a significant number of recommended increases in staff in the special ed department. So what we're going to be looking at, we've already been through needs assessment, we're putting together our wish list, and of course, you know, still going through the numbers and going through all of that to present to the board.
Okay. No further questions? No.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chambers.
Okay, we'll recommend it with the board. Carlos, next agenda item, please.
Item 3, community input.
Rachel.
Nada?
No. This brings us to?
Item 4, adjournment.
Adjournment, and it is 8:16. Too long.
You did
two
a good
hours
job.
No.
Okay, I heard a really good
one. It's a good one.